He's out of Google Drive storage. But we'll get rolling. All right, we're here with Brian Kagan's University of North Texas. What a hot start to the football season, 8-1. Obviously, you can't not talk about that. Things are going amazing. You've got several titles. I've heard you speak at a clinic, and I was, I think I'd said Yoda and the Matrix, the knowledge you have and the way that you make it the complex, simple. And I've never had a conversation or heard you talk and not left having to think, which is what I always enjoy. I don't want to just hear what I already know regurgitated. So excited to have you on. And we're just going to get right to it, Coach, if that's all right with you.
Let's roll. Let's get it.
All right, Blake, fire away.
Okay, Coach, I'm going to talk to you about some intern questions. It's kind of intern season coming up. What do you look for when you're selecting an intern?
I want somebody that's eager as hell. I want somebody that's kind of kicking the door in a little bit. Those are hard to find. I want somebody that can be up here, you know, day and night. I want somebody that wants to sleep up here. I want somebody that I have to throw out of the weight room. I want somebody that when I look up at the end of the day and I'm sweeping the floor, I look up and that they're right there next to me and I didn't have to say a damn thing to them. Those are the things that I really, really like to see. I know that's not possible for everybody because there's classes and there's work and people have to make a living, and I get it. But that's like number one. If you don't have the capacity to grind in this thing, I don't care where you're at, what you're doing, how much time or how much a coach values, you better freaking love working. And that's a number one. And then two, you better ask questions like crazy. If you're not curious, or if you can't hold a good conversation with me, then like, I'm not interested, because I'm going to hit you with some heavy level stuff. And I expect you to take that question. Like, if you didn't get it, I expect you to take that question and go home and like come back with something. And it's not going to be the normal, I don't enjoy talking about the what's in the book stuff anymore. Like I'm a daydreamer. So I keep people on my staff that keep me grounded a little bit. But I love people that will have a conversation with me and that can have a conversation really just about anything, any rabbit hole. So those things are like, are you a good person? Can you grind? Are you curious? And then, you know, do you interact with the athletes? Do you get things done without me having to tell you to do it? Because I'm not, I think probably one, I have a hard time just being an asshole. And so if you don't do the work, like I'm just, one day I'm either just going to fire you or let you just kind of be there and you're going to help us where you can. But then when it's time for recommendation, be like, look, you didn't, it ain't happening, you know? So, I mean, a lot of different things, but that's mainly the gist of it.
Gotcha. That answers my question perfectly. Next question. How many applications do you usually have for these positions / how many do you hire?
We have had, we did it differently this football season. We had the football program put out, like the actual Mean Green Football page put something out, and we got a lot more people. So maybe like 20 applications at the most. I think we took on 6 after the first day. We had 4, and now we're down to 2. And they all,
that's attrition right there, man.
And I guess in the summertime, in the wintertime, we took on about six people. And then day one, like first conditioning, kind of because of the tree that I'm from, and even with like Coach Browse back in high school, like they lifted with us. They were in the trenches with us. They were in the fire with us all the time. And then I go to college and my strength coach runs every single session with us. And so like day one, I tell them, you know, you don't have to do this, but we're going to run with them. And it's obviously a test, and some of them do and don't. And I'm not judging off that, but usually they try and step into it. And then after the day we run them to death, like, it's kind of like, let's see how, if they come back. And that's what I want to see. Like, that's step one. And are they going to fight? So we lose some by that. So usually we end up with 1 or 2 by the end of it.
Wait, so did you post something? Like you said, it's intern season. Have y'all posted something that we're looking for? Free labor, come get your experience here in the spring. We're looking for interns, or do you post that for the spring already?
We haven't posted it on social media. We have been going into our kinesiology department and partnering with them on campus across the street. And so the two universities here in town between North Texas and TWU have two like pretty fantastic kinesiology departments. So we've been kind of using those students. We will put an ad out here pretty soon to get people to come in. And we've been pretty fortunate with our internship programs. We got one guy came from a GA spot. He came down and became, he's now a full-time assistant at UTRGV. I have a sports science intern that just passed the CSCS, zero strength conditioning experience, and now he's interviewing with the Detroit Tigers. And this is just a student that came in off the street. There's somebody else. I've got a guy that's in, not Breckenridge, what's the town that's right next to Possum Kingdom? Graham. Yeah. He just became the strength coach at Graham. And then I just hired back one of our interns to be our swim, dive, and tennis strength coach. She was an intern, winter intern with us. So if you do come in here and do a good job, you know, that's the selling point. And you would think we'd get more off of that, but I don't know how many people really want to do this thing full tilt anymore. They kind of get in and see the expectations of what we're asking them to do. And it's like, man, I don't know if I want to take this journey all the way.
It's tough, and you look at the criteria, and I'm just being an old man talking to you, like, man, the expectations, you got a degree, you got certifications, and you're going to go do it for free, not even 160 hours, which is a better deal where you pay to work for free, the 160-hour internship. So if you're getting TWU students, I've been surprised in these conversations, a lot of schools, they won't even take interns. If they're not a full-time student at the university, that's not the case with y'all. Y'all can take someone that doesn't go to class at UNP.
Yeah, I'll take anybody. And nobody's ever told me that I can't do that.
Yeah, and I was like, it was several. I just like, man, that's a very limiting pool. And I won't name the university, but they also told me they had 30 interns. I'm like, how do you manage 30 interns? That's a lot of humanity there.
I never had it. I did so many years in high school, and it was just me. And then you get to Oklahoma, and they try and tell us that it's against the NCAA rules to have an intern. So it was like, it was us five. We did everything. Like, we set everything up. And that's one of the first things I tell interns when we get here is like, I don't need you. You know, it's like, I can do this on my own. I'm really good at doing this on my own. And if you don't do the work, I'm just going to do it. And so you got to look for those opportunities, because it's not something that I'm used to having. And I tell my assistants that too, when somebody's, you know, 25, 26, 27, and they're like, if I don't feel like doing, I'll make him do it. You better get your ass in there and do it too.
I'm curious, who is your strength coach at Tech? He did the running workouts with y'all?
Benny Wiley.
Oh, okay. I worked for Rusty Witt for a little while. He would do the same. He would do the AM runs and the PM runs, and he was in phenomenal shape. But I was like, you got to be in shape to do multiple. And it was old school condition, and it was, you know, 110s, shuttles. It wasn't a feed the cats kind of speed workout they were going through multiple times. Blake, you got anything else? We're passing it on.
That's it.
All right, Brock.
Hi, Coach. I'm going to go more sports science realm. Do you guys use any type of GPS systems, or is it just kind of the old-fashioned way?
No, we use we have Catapult. We have 48 guys on Catapult, and we just mainly are D-line and skill guys. We take a look at it. We use it to really simplistic. I don't get too much in the weeds because – I said, right now there's three of us working with football. And so I look at it to look at zone five speed, which is 90% or greater. And then I look at it for total yards. I think the total amount of yards, I've gone back and forth on it. I used to break it up into different speed zones, anywhere from like walking to a jog, to a stride, to high speed, to dead ass sprint kind of thing. So now we just look at total distance because we have our indoor and we have our outdoor. So our indoor, we're going to get an estimate. And, but what I do is I tally that up across the week. And when guys like being at the top of our receiver room, if you're number one in yards, like every single day, what we've learned is that's a dangerous place to be. And that top spot should be rotating. And then on Sundays, we average those yards together and we top to bottom. And it's kind of like we've found a sweet spot there for each position of what it should look like, because, you know, our coaches are, you know, Coach Morris seems like a nice guy and all that, but he'll look up and the receivers will have ran their freaking asses off. And so we have to keep, I got to go up there and tell them those things, because that's the one thing that can get out of control here is kind of that receiver room, that offensive room, because they'll run routes until they're tired of watching them run routes. Look up and have a receiver with 9,000 yards in a practice, and it's like, oh my God, we got to stop doing this. And we made adjustments. Like, we made adjustments going into camp and talked to coach, and he's like, hey, we're going to shorten these practices up. We're going to start with like a 15 period practice. And even in my mind, I assumed like that's going to be great. But the only thing that happened was 15 periods, and then it just got that much harder because the intensity shot through the roof, because we got to get this all in 15 periods, which ended up being worse. So that's kind of what made me switch to yards. And I was like, okay, we got 15. So in 15, these yards should be less, not the same, when it comes to the end of it. And we make sure we hit 90% once a week with the guys. Outside of that, I'm not convinced by much else when looking at GPS and taking a whole bunch of time with it right now.
Is he a pure air raid, pat and go, loose drill, routes on air? Those receivers just kind of that format of they're just going the whole time?
Yeah, it's not even. It's good now. We really dialed it in because of the importance of it. But it is, there's nobody can touch what receivers do here. If you come here to play receiver, you better be ready to run.
That's awesome. 9,000 yards?
Nobody's hit 9,000. We had one in a game a couple weeks ago that set the record. It was 8,300 and something yards in a game.
Yeah, you better be ready for that. That's most people that would break them, but they adapt and they find a way.
Yeah.
How about you, Brock?
When you're saying you're looking at the data, is that just you handling the sports science, or is it your staff as a collective, or do you guys have like somebody that's the sports science guy and kind of feeds it to you?
Well, I've taken to, so UNT has this amazing data analytics program, and we get students from all over the world that come here for it. And so got lucky on the first one, brought him in. This is the guy that's interviewing with Detroit, and he wanted to come in. I saw that he had a degree, so I knew he had a skill set in analytics. I said, all I need you to do is learn how to do GPS, and then you go out and find, you can do whatever project you want with this. And then just, if I ask for something specific, give me something specific, and then you can tell me whatever you want. So that's where he kind of fell in love with that. So I tend to go out and find guys that like sports. My current guy he's from India. He just graduated with a master's degree in advanced data analytics. He has an undergraduate in computer science with a specialization in artificial intelligence. And his master plan is to be a race strategist in Formula One. Oh. Like, you're perfect.
Fascinating.
Yeah, because we don't have all this stuff. So his skill set is super unique. He loves sports. He can code. I don't need to go out and buy the super fancy, you know, programs, and I don't need to spend all this money when I've got somebody that I can just, this is what I need, and then they can go and code it, and they can go and they can work with Microsoft BI and develop all these sheets that we use. So they develop that, and then we look at the information. We kind of like, this is what I want to see. How can I get this? How can we take these weights and make it easier? How can I look at this average? And they're the problem solvers when it comes to that, because those are the things I'm not good at.
That's awesome. So I guess that's, you tap into your kinesis department, and then you also tap into your data analytics department. So you're in-house kind of recruiting talent, just like you're going to school recruiting a wide receiver. You're Or do you assign a coach? Hey, keep your eyes out for our next data analytics guy.
A little bit. I asked my two current guys. I've had professors over here. They kind of geek out about the idea of what we could do with research. And I know it's kind of touchy when you talk about doing research on, you know, guys that are here and the way things are now, but I'm open to it as long as it stays anonymous and everything. So we haven't done anything, but there's mutual interest there. So I try and take advantage of that to make sure that, you know, not that I'm trying to take advantage of them, but we can help each other out on those things.
That's awesome. Mark, anything else?
Just one more. So when you're given the data and all that, are you guys meeting together with the coaching staff and the data analytics people, and you're kind of breaking down what the practices look like, or is it just you personally going to the coaching staff and be like, hey, this is what we're seeing, you know, maybe let's tweak this a little bit, or, you know, there's not enough yards with these guys, let's, you know, give them some more.
So I get, as a strength staff, we'll sit down and we'll discuss what's going on, what do we need to do with any ideas, but I'm the only one that'll go upstairs. So I'll go up, we'll sit in a staff meeting. I don't strategize. I don't do anything. I tell the position coaches, this is where it's at. I don't think this is great. You need to change something. I don't tell them what to change. That's on, because in a game that you're trying to win, I don't need him thinking about, you know, I got to do this. I got to take some yards off. Like, I need them to go out and bust their ass and make sure those guys are ready to play. Now, we'll have that strategy with the head coach. I'll sit in his office and be like, hey, these things are really concerning to me, this position. And then, two, if I do that in a staff meeting, sometimes it sounds like I'm attacking a position coach, or I'm attacking this, that, and the other, and that's the last thing I want to do. And so I kind of have those more sensitive talks with just me and the head coach and making sure that he understands, because ultimately, you know, I do have the title of assistant head coach, but that doesn't give me any power over those guys or any authority over what those guys do. So I give him the information. I'll have kind of that talk with defensive coordinator maybe a little bit as well. But other than that, the only time that I'll intervene is when I see if we haven't had a guy get any like zone 5 yards in a week or two. And I'm like, hey, you're going to run. And because I know I have the support on that, and we got to find a way to get it done.
Let's talk about your staff. How many do you have? I know you mentioned you had three with football. How many in total are there on staff at UNT?
So right now, I only have two. My first assistant left. He took a job with the military. And so he's moving back to Oklahoma, working with Air Force, like special operations, which is an awesome, phenomenal job. Super excited for him. And so it's myself and Coach Ojeda right now. I've got one intern who she's a freaking stud. She's been with us since the summer. She's ready for something, a job. She's helping us out. I have a swim dive tennis coach. I have a softball soccer coach. I have my two basketball coaches. And then I'll be hiring somebody in the wintertime.
Do y'all share the same facility, all sports in one facility?
Everybody but basketball is in the side, this weight room here.
And is it dictated by who's in season or number of athletes, or we can be honest, football and then everybody else kind of, or can you fit multiple teams in there at the same time?
No, we have the second smallest weight room in the conference. I think we're sitting at 6,000 square feet. Like it's not a big weight room. I have 14 platforms. That's because I moved two platforms in here. I moved two racks in here that aren't on platforms. It's the same floor. Football has the morning block year round, and everybody else makes it work. And we haven't had many issues. On November 13th, we're getting a new facility. It's construction on that. So we're going to go from 6,000 square feet to 18,000 square feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty sweet.
Wow. Nothing like tripling your square footage, which makes scheduling a little easier as well. You know, the follow-up question was going to be kind of what are the assignments with two of you? Do you and Ryan, do you split big skills, or when you were at USCOU, I'm coming from a D3 kind of mindset. What does that look like in terms of do you break it down your program in bigs? I've got skills, or do you say, hey, you're a speed person, I'm a strength person, everybody does a little different.
So we, when I was at OU, we would definitely be like bigs and skills and break those guys up in that sense. Because of the way it is now where I'm getting, you know, last year it was 60-something. The year before that it was 70 new guys. Like, you're looking at a new team. So now it is offense, defense. And we roll from there because I need that group together, working together and rolling together. Everything in the strength in the weight room now becomes super generalistic. I need to get you strong, and I need to get you like strong, and I need to get you moving well right now. So a lot of there's just very general things that I know that work. I'm using that with dang near everybody. And I got to work around. I got to figure out what are the injuries that you didn't tell us about? What are the back things? How many guys that are coming in that didn't tell their trainer that they have a broken back or they did something? And so we got to work around a lot of different things now. And so we keep it. Nothing's really specialized because I don't know who to trust and to do. And I don't have the 3-4 years of development with somebody so they know what those expectations are. I put everybody in the same room and we're rocking with that expectation. And there's three of us, you know, three people that are really experienced that I can put onto my staff. So it's limiting on, you know, keeping an eye on everybody and making sure they're doing things right, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and then you and it's Ryan, correct? Oida?
Yes, sir.
How long have y'all worked together? Long time?
This will be his second. This is his second season with us. We've known each other for a long time, since 2017. But I was never in a place that I could hire him. And when I came here, I knew who I wanted my first assistant to be. But when I was thinking about the time, I was like, there's no way this guy's going to come work with me for that much money. And so when that position opened up and he reached out and wanted to and make this thing happen, just to make the jump to get the experience, and I was like, he's a no-brainer. Like, you use me to get the experience, and I need to get inside your head to learn this movement piece. And that's when that stuff took off, is when we put, you know, when we linked up finally and we could talk to each other every day and not just over the phone once a week. That's when everything really took off.
And then just kind of last professional question and then more actual nuts and bolts. So you've been in the game for a while. You're putting a band together. You're looking for someone in January. You probably already know who you want. You reach out to them, or you post it and actually look at resumes, or is it already, hey, I'm going to make 3 phone calls and then we'll post it on HR to check all the boxes. But how do you approach that?
I have a list in my head. Unfortunately, right now, the list, I can't afford the list where I'm at currently. So, you know, those guys have gotten so well, and like, a guy that I would love to call is currently with the LA Rams. You know, he's not coming. But so what I look for now, or I get ahead of the game a little bit. I want to hire a staff that represents the team more than anything. So I when they come in the weight room, I want the black players to see, you know, I want any Hispanic or poly. Like, that's my dream staff, is to have representation for the team in that room and see us working together. I'd like to have a guy that's really good at strength stuff so I can bounce those ideas off of him. I'd like to have a guy that's good at movement and speed so I can bounce those things off of him. And then we can have real well-structured talks. If I had a full 5-man staff, I would have somebody that is like RTP, professional, return to play kind of person that's really good in the movement and mobility, so we can have those talks as well. And we can have a really well-rounded staff where everybody has something that they kind of geek out about. They're good at everything, but that's their thing that they get really excited about.
That's good. And it'll happen eventually. You'll have that band and you'll put them together, and everybody will geek out on what they really love, which is fun because they have a passion for it. You don't have to motivate them to have that passion. In season, which this is not a typical week, let's say it was last week or it's going to be next week, what does the typical in-season training schedule look like?
So right now we're going Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So we have a day right, a lift right before the game. We lift the dev group before practice. And there's really no true dev group anymore. It's just the group that's not getting a lot of the reps. So we lift them before, and then we lift the other groups after practice. I wasn't very excited about that at first. It's been fine. Everything's working out well. Structure wise, Monday is like, it's kind of themes on Monday. Monday would be like a structural reset in my mind right now. So a lot of the programming is going to kind of be like a total body, single leg, you know, get the joints moving around, stack the joints, squat within it, things that require movements that are going to require a crap load of concentration for the guys. And then I'm going to throw in like some eccentric movements to lengthen out those joints, those tendons, and really stress that body out again and get it going. And then we're going to kind of integrate a flow type movement, like a total body movement that's going to, you know, we're kind of require the entire system to work at the same time. And it's going to be different than your typical like landmine or pulls. We would think total body, automatically you're going to start thinking Olympic or jerks or things like that. These are going to require some rotational movements, concentration on where my foot's at, chest at, eyes at, things like that. And then we'll get into our Wednesday lift is going to kind of be an isometric, but with a power theme. So it's going to have the isometric hold, but I'm going to assign some velocity based off of that. So we start to fire that thing back up. So they have a power element in that one. And then that's also going to be kind of a hypertrophy, which I typically refer to as like a body armor. So we're going to throw it on the back end on that for that auxiliary work. So like the main movement on Monday would be like an RFE and some pull-ups in that sense. On that Wednesday, we're looking at the back squat and or squat movement, bilateral squat movement and a bench. And then the main movements on like a Friday, which is going to be straight up, you know, power, flow, move, fast, and concentric work. And so trap bar, jumps, light. Move this crap out of it. Same thing with bench. I'm going to do bench again, but I'm going to take it down, assign like a 0.85 meters per second, rip it, slam the ball, do some push-ups. And we call it arm farm session for about 5 minutes. Let the guys look good, get the bicep vein popping, and then we're out.
And then it's the time shortened. Is Monday? Do y'all practice Monday or no?
Yeah, we're all Sunday, practice Monday team.
Okay. And then is Monday the longest, Wednesday shorter, and Friday the shortest as far as time-wise?
They're all pretty fast. We don't get a whole lot of time, and so we get them in there, and that's why I kind of stick to the basic movers. I get about 40 minutes in on each one of those lifts, and the Friday one is really, really short.
And then, man, I think you played at least two games on a Friday. That week, you're just getting the two, and you kill the Friday, or are you a game day lift person? And would you do that game day?
No, we the adjustment we've made on those was we lifted twice that week on those Friday games, and then I just told Coach if we can do something when we get there. So when we went to Army, we had to leave really early, and it's a long flight up to New York. So as soon as we got off the plane, like we need to get out and we need to move. And then this the other week when we had to go out to North Carolina, long flight, we didn't get to do anything in the morning. Let's just go outside and let's move around and let's, you know, not get so sluggish from having sitting on. That's like one of the worst things we do to our bodies is sitting down. Really just sitting in general is not great, but should be sitting on the ground. And so if I could just get them out, get them moving, get them back into those range of motions, get those joints moving a little bit and take care of it so they don't get stuck and then feel slow and sluggish on the next day, then I feel good about it moving forward.
How do you monitor load? How do you monitor that in season? There's so many variables. How many snaps guys are getting either in practice or a game? They're probably going to reflect each other and be similar. Not including GPS and yardage, but are you old school just eyeballing? I heard some DBT metrics you're talking about. How do you say, hey man, I need to dial back this week. I went a little too hard, flew too close to the sun. How are you looking at those things?
I think it's all the above. Obviously, like you can't ever replace just a good old gut feeling about a guy. We also jump our guys twice a week. We just switched over to Hawken Dynamics force plates, so we have three of those. So we're making that transition right now to be able to dial in. We've had the just jump mats forever, and we've done drop jump. And so we've taken those jump numbers, and we track them over the time. And then anybody that's below 90% of their, you know, their peak jump that they've had, that's kind of like it red flags and lets us know that, you know, hey, we need to have this conversation. We're also watching their body weight. Guys that are dropping off the map on body weight, that's fixing to get a conversation on what we need to do and what kind of adjustments we need to make. And I don't tend to argue with guys when they're like, coach, I'm tired. Can I get on something else? Like, because they know that we're going to go heavy. They got to go heavy on things if it's a heavy week. But I'm more than willing to get them on something different and that provides the same stimulus. Because like anything, the only way that I could be successful is if that joker's playing on Saturday. And they know that. And they know that I know that. So,
yeah. 10%, I guess, deficit is the red flag, or you tag it. You're like, hey, this jump went down 10%. Let's dig into it a little deeper. Do you do anything for upper body power, or is it safe to assume if their lower body power went down 10%, there's a good chance that upper did as well?
I would say, yeah, if they're going down, it's a lower body. It's neuromuscular. It's something hurts, or they're just not eating. So that would also probably look like weight loss is going on, something along those lines. And so I don't make immediate adjustments. Usually it's just a conversation of what's going on. You can catch a lot of different things. I don't need them to fill out a form. If the weight's dropping, man, what's going on outside of here? If the jump's dropping, like, how are you living? Are you sleeping at night? Those kinds of things. But you got to do a really good job of paying attention to it, which is not always easy. Sometimes you look up and be like, damn, I haven't looked at this stuff in a week. Because things just tend to get busy and you get wrapped up in something else.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Do you change, how often do you change movements? So you have a 4-week cycle wave, and then you change movements, or do you stay with it longer for younger players?
Younger players, if we were in off season, I would, like younger guys, I would be just hammer the stuff home and get really strong at some of the basic things. We're going to, you know, squat, we're going to deadlift, and we're going to bench, and we're going to get you freaking strong in those within the correct pattern. The older guys, kind of the same thing in off season. Now, the older guys and in season, I'm going to rotate through some stuff. Like I'm going to go on that Monday, that unilateral lift. We're going to go from step ups to RFEs to reverse lunges. I'm just going to throw a lot of different things at them, but I'm not going to do it. I'm probably going to do it 2 or 3 week basis. And then, and I do like to like kind of step load as we go through it within those ranges. But at the same time, as long as the games line up, if it's a game where, you know, we're in the game, we're good, you know, I'm going to load. If it's a game that's a big and I know it and I've circled it on the schedule, I'm fixing to gas them up around that week, which means I'm going to build, and then I'm fixing to take it off completely down to, you know, 30-40%, and just what I usually say is throw a little gas on the fire and make it and hopefully get them feeling good.
What about this bye week? Is this throw gas, or is this, hey, let's take advantage, we're already lighter on practice, treat it as a download week, or, hey, they're not playing anybody, I can kind of amp it up this week?
We're going to I amped it up just a little bit this week. Now, they've had Monday and Tuesday off. Our first lift will be tomorrow with this. So the volume and the intensity went up just, like a 2.5% on just about everything. And so it's nothing big, but it's that time of year, and I still can't get rid of this old model that Coach Browse used to have. But like those last 3 weeks of the season, he always called it the playoff push. And the whole mentality was while everybody else is, oh, we got to back off and we got to do this. Like the mentality is like, no, like we're going to be, when everybody's out their weakest point, we're fixing to be at our strongest point. And now I'll manage and make sure that we don't overdo that. But I need that mentality. I need that thought process in their head. Like I'm fixing to be a bad mother at the end of the year while you're weak as crap. And as we roll forward.
It's a model that worked. Success leaves clues, man. You did a good job with that. You said you give options. You said they're going to squat. Maybe not necessarily do a back squat during the season, or you got some guys you have on a belt squat machine or goblet squats. Or how much do you give them options? Is it based on their performance? You know, your dogs, you give them more options. Your puppies are like, no, screw you, you're back squatting.
Yeah, I would say, like, if you're a dude, I'm not messing with it. Like, I got you. Like, we're going to take care of it. And you know that they'll work with, because of that trust that's kind of there, I'm going to work with you, you're going to work with me. And so we'll roll forward there. The young bucks, even if they tell me something's hurting, like I always tell my interns this too. So y'all can hear me on this, but like being a hard ass is all fun and games until you force it. Like you yell at a kid to get his ass down there and then he comes up and he says my back and then he never plays another snap of football. I have a guy named Khalil Halton. Like I'm spotting him, like, you know, get your effing ass down there and all this stuff. And then he comes up, he's like, kid never played again. And I'm just like, was that worth it? And so especially nowadays, we need these guys in a bad way to win these ball games. And it builds trust over time. And I don't know. I just find the more I tell these guys the truth, the more truth I get back from them. And I'm willing to work around it. So I don't think squat is the end all be all of every single lift. And when we get in there, so if they don't like it and something's bothering them in season, I got another way that I can get you strong, you know, whether it be the pitch shark, the leg press. I've got a couple of the old school, the Pro Maxima Pro Runners. You can weight that and press back. The new weight room is going to be sweet. I'm bringing in a lot of the old hack squats and all the stuff. If I just need to get your lower body strong, we can do that.
Do you Olympic lift in season?
We'll do some pulls. I don't really. It's not a huge concern for me whether or not we do it a lot. We'll pull. I feel like I get a lot more out of trap bar pulls, a little bit safer pull. I can do it violently. I don't have to worry about somebody's ass shooting up in the air and tweaking a little low back on those. I find that I have to work around way too many wrists and hands and things like that with the clean. And so I don't tend to do a whole lot in season with that stuff.
And then deadlifts. Like it's curious, but we always kind of debate or have robust dialogue on deadlift. Your deadlift in off season, is it hex only in season?
No, we'll mess with the clean deadlift. We did sumo a lot. We did sumo in season this year some. So we'll do tight base. We'll do clean deadlifts. We'll do trap bar deadlifts, and we can rotate through that on a fairly regular basis.
Mike, any follow up on the deadlift? I'm putting you on the spot.
I am. I'm on a little adventure because to see which coaches like deadlift, you know, conventional deadlift, and the guys don't. And you seem to be conventional. Do you trap bar at all?
I enjoy trap bar the most, and I'll tell you why. Like, I'll ask you a question about like pelvic positioning and whatnot. Like, as you sit right now, are your hips in flexion or are your hips in extension?
Under flexion.
All right, so are you sitting straight up and down? Like, is your back and pelvis rolled over the top of your femur right now, or is your back slouched?
Slouched.
It was currently slouched when you asked that question.
It was slouched, and so which way is that pelvis? Is it going to anteriorly tilt while you're slouched, or is it going to posteriorly tilt while you're slouched?
Interior.
Sit up. If I sit up like this, feel that thing roll over the top, mm-hmm. and then let that back go. Where does it go?
See, I told you to make you think.
You caught me off guard.
As soon as I get a good posture, I feel a anterior pelvic tilt.
Yes. And so that's like when we squat now, or when I got to go down to bend a bar with a flat back and I need to truly load the hips, the knees got to go out and that pelvis has to have the room to tilt over the top of that femur. So the way we sit, though, we sit slouched with our knees out. That pelvis is slouched and posterior tilted because I'm slouched like this. Most of our guys don't have they end up not having the room to get into those positions low enough for deadlift. And so if I can't get the pelvis over the top and the knees out, like, where's that load going to go no matter what I do or what I tell them to do?
Spine. They're L4 and L5.
Yep. Straight to the back. And that's a tough one to get to wrap the head around. It's the same thing with squat. There's very few guys that have the room for that. So that's a tough one to wrap your head around on whether or not it's worth it. Now, I'm going to do it, but there's coaching points to get guys there, but just training them to feel where that stops at. So I got knees going out as I squat, it rolls down, and you can, when you're aware of it, you can feel an absolute place where like, man, that's it. And you'll feel everything shift to on up the chain to distribute that load.
Which that's a good segue with in season. This will kind of seem random, but I think I can tie it together. What do you do? Mobility, recovery. I think you're an RPR guy. You may or may not be, or you're a functional range conditioning guy. I don't know what square one is. I'm extremely curious. I feel like you recently went down that rabbit hole, and you're a very outside-the-box thinker, and you've had amazing results. What are you doing for optimizing human movement and performance? Because that was once you got my wheels thinking, you were like, aerial squat, and all of a sudden you flip the switch and you were Yoda, and that got me going. And it's probably a really holistic approach, but what are you doing to keep your guys moving well?
This is gonna sound crazy as hell. I got to start this with a story. And in 2021, are you guys familiar with Goda? Anybody heard of them? Okay, so they hit the scene, and their business model is just kind of talking crap on people's Instagram, and they were attacking like my videos that I was posting from OU. And what they say was GOTA stands for greatest of all time actions. So guys that move within this certain framework. And so their thing that they would say was WOTA, worst of all time actions. And most people would tell them to F off, all that kind of stuff. I remember leaning in and be like, you got to tell me what I'm doing wrong then. Like, what's the case here? And that's how I've always kind of been. Like, if I'm wrong, then tell me how I'm wrong, because I want to be right. And so we kind of get this agreement that we start talking. And then as we were going, I was like, but part of this agreement is you got to stop. Nobody, like, stop talking. Like, don't say anything. If you want to get into OU, if this is the only way that it happens. And I remember the boss guy said something to one of my videos like 2 weeks later, and I popped off online. It's the first time I've probably ever done this. And like the whole community came at me, and it was like, shit, you know what I mean? And, but like 2 weeks later, we're at a game, and this guy, his name's Cody Wood, because I'm saying his name because we're friends now. He comes to the game and he's yelling my name, and he's like, man, I'm sorry. That's not what I wanted to happen. And I remember that stuck with me, because that took a lot of, like, I appreciate people that are able to do that, because I do that. And like, if I'm wrong, I'm going to eat it. And so he comes to the game, and I remember that. So as I'm doing the movement things, especially in this last year, the more gallop, the more change of direction, the more I'm like, it's in the back of my head. Like, this is to do this really well. This is GOTA. This is what they're talking about. This is I can feel the hip rotating. And if I don't do it, then I limit myself to the range of motion. Like, I'm starting to, like, I need to reach out. And so I reached out to him. He came through. I reached out to GOTA. I was like, hey, I hate the way this did. And they immediately apologized too. So I'm all in on that. So this is where I'm at with this. And it kind of helped lead into, this will all lead into square one too. The human system is designed to do, like, it's designed to move in a specific way. Like, we can all, yes, we can move, and we can change direction, and we can react to situations differently, but the anatomy of the human body is essentially exactly the same in all of us. So when we go into, let's say, flexion, when I walk, when that knee comes up to load like it needs to, that knee needs to come up, it needs to go out, and it needs to externally rotate as it does that. That's the path of the femur inside the hip. When I have full range to do that, then I can load the glute can fire, the bicep femoris can fire, and then as I continue, the path of the hip is going to pull that leg into internal rotation, and those muscles are going to switch over, and I'm going to shift over into those medial hamstrings, those semis, I'm going to shift over into those adductors. That's going to load. And then that psoas that sits at the lower back, it wraps around like this. It attaches on the posterior medial side. So if I'm going to load it, then I've got to I've got to load it here. And so now that's it. So to get to full extension, I've got to get to full extension with internal rotation. And I know this is a lot, but the point I'm getting to is if I can't access those points, like let's say I can't get internal rotation, you know, I never fully load the psoas in the first place. So now the main thing that's supposed to be doing the flexing of the hip shifts over to the quads. It shifts over to like the IT band tightness, all those things, because my body's desperately trying to get there. So now because I didn't load my psoas, my knee goes up. I don't fully flex the hip. I don't ever load the glute. And now the glute's not loaded. So now I'm overloading the hamstrings and the adductors. So if I never get to full flexion, I never get to full extension. And so what are the things that we constantly see over and over and over again? It's always hamstrings. It's always adductors. It's always quads. It's always the same things that pop up. And this has been a hell of a journey to get here. But RPR, in my mind, damn near proves all this stuff. Because part of the testing, if I take you out and I test your psoas and it's not on, most of the time I can move you right down the middle and I can test and it's rock solid because you're finding hip flexion through that rectus femoris. So if I go in and I interrupt that movement pattern, all of a sudden the psoas fires because I've interrupted something that's overactive. And so now that muscle is working again. Then I flip you over, you raise your leg up, push, that leg goes straight down because you're not using your glute. You're not used to using it. You're trying to use your hamstrings to extend the hip. So because of what do we know now, hamstrings, adductors, flip it back over. I rub the adductors. I hit both ends of the distal hamstring. Flip it back over. Wow, glute fires. But then I flip it back over and I test that psoas again, and it's even stronger. So I know that that's a whole mental map to be able to see, but it just proves the point, like, if I can't access that position, then it doesn't matter how much strengthening of the hamstrings I do. It doesn't matter how much glute exercising I do. It doesn't matter how much psoas exercising I do. It's not going to be enough because I don't have the capacity to reach that position. So we've got to learn to access within a whole different framework of what the human model looks like in the gait cycle. And so I think GOTA does an unbelievable job of doing that. It's just their business model at first made them kind of a pariah amongst the strength and conditioning. But I'm not here for my emotions and my feelings. Like I'm trying to be elite, and I've got like a 30-page slide deal of research piece by piece, joint by joint that says they're right. And it's fascinating as hell. And I could go on and on and on because I've been obsessed with it since I left, you know, Abilene in the summertime. But
yeah. Well, is that who does Square One? Is it GOTA or NATA?
No, so Square One is a guy named Sean. Hold on. What is the name? Sean Sherman. And it kind of proves the point even further. So RPR is reflexive and faulty pattern kind of driven, stress driven, breathing pattern driven. Square One finds the root joint of the problem. And so let's say that your psoas doesn't fire. It's turned off. I could go down, and this is the strange part. I can go down and just squeeze your toes, and then it'll fire. And then I can move up. I can squeeze the middle of your foot, and it'll fire. And then I can go up, and I can squeeze the ankle, and then dead. So now I know that it's the ankle that's housing the problem of that psoas. It's like trying to locate the circuit breaker in the house.
And is it RPR being self wake up drills, so you're in compliance and not having hands on, is Square One similar in that you don't have to manually touch, you know, an athlete or something?
No, Square One is a little bit more. I would say it's a lot more specialized. You're gonna have to test. You're not rubbing on anybody. You're not doing anything, but you're testing the crap out of somebody. And so it's driven through isometric work. So the best you could do is maybe like here, push it in my hand. Like you're not hitting spots like you are with RPR. With the Square One, you're simply trying to locate where the where the circuitry is bad. What joint is it in there? So it doesn't disjoint. It's not disjoint specific, but what specific action within the gait cycle is causing this to happen? And it's fascinating as hell.
Did you do RPR certification, or did you go through one of those seminars?
Yeah, when I first got to Oklahoma, I had heard about it. I've been watching it, and I wanted to create a splash and then like get somebody in here to talk. So I reached out, and lo and behold, Caldez came. Like, he came down and had got that dinner with him the night before, and I was like, man, this is freaking awesome. So it started there, and I knew that I needed to practice because I had had a whole case of quadriceps tendonitis for a long time. And here comes – I've done the training room. I've done all the stuff, and nothing is working. Here comes this guy who's like, you know, does all this stuff. And I stand up, and I was like, you got to be kidding. Like, it's ridiculous.
Voodoo magic, like.
Yeah. And so
it's weird because you do, it's all self wake up, and especially in today's age, you got to be careful. But at the clinic, I remember it was like, hey, I'm James, and I'm about to rub on your psoas. And, you know, it was kind of an awkwardness of just meeting someone and you're putting hands on them. How do you, I guess, and again, I'm thinking this is obviously. I don't think it ever be an hour conversation because I love talking it up with you, but do you use RPR and Squarespace together? Do they work good in unison, or does one supersede the other?
Yeah, I was having a really good conversation with a guy, and his name's Ricky Stanzi. He is he's like a co-owner of this Goda company now. And the fundamental solution to me is we've got to get these guys live like walking and living in a different way. Like a great little quote here is that your form doesn't equal movement. Your movement equals your form. So how you move all day long equals your form. And so I got to make these guys aware of how they move, and we've got to be able to access and stack and pay attention to their bodies the way that it's supposed to be when they take on pressure, and just show them where these things are at. That's the fundamental solution. That's the game. That's the long game. You know, if you get there, man, right? But that's a hell of a lot of investment. I think the symptom solution is our, like, before we go out to play, yeah. Game day morning, we're RPRing. I'm going to make sure stuff is firing because I know that works. It's the least I can do. Because I know, like in my mind, I know that if I test your glute and then you go put the bands on, you can do kick circuit and you can blast the glutes and you're going to come over there, you're going to go and you're going to retest. It's still not going to work. And you have to know how to access these positions.
Was it an in-person certification course, Square One, or was it online?
This one was online. Yeah, this one's online. If I want to take it further, which maybe I think one of these days, sooner or later, I will. But you have to go. The next one's in person because you have to be able to do it. You got to be able to think through the gait cycle. Which step is it? What happens in that step? What joint actions are happening? Like when my foot hits the ground. Okay, so the problem is in the foot. What joint actions happen in the foot? Because I'm going to need to feed those actions into that joint. To be able to diagnose what's causing that. And some joints, super simple, right? At the knee, flexion extension, and then internal, external with the tibia, you know, like, and then it goes up to the hip. So you've got a lot more, you've got flexion extension, you've got abduction, adduction, internal, external rotation. You're going to have to, and then as you go up to the lumbar, the thoracic, the shoulders, the hands, like what is taking place? It's a lot. And, most of the time, it doesn't go up that high, but when it starts to get up there, you're like, oh my God, it's a lot to wrap around. So I don't know how long it'll take me to get to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go to this next one. But it's simple enough to kind of start messing around with, yeah.
So you definitely recommend it?
Absolutely, yeah. The level one, it was expensive. It's something that I just kind of made part of the continuing education for. Off of the budget, and it's kind of eye opening. I would do that. I would also recommend GOTA does a free level one course where they introduce you to kind of the concepts that they're under, their groundwork, and just kind of going back. Another fantastic book that I've been reading lately that you have to go back, it's called The Endless Web, and it kind of puts things into perspective. It's a book that was written in the 90s, and you're like, how does this get lost to time? But it literally takes you from, you know, embryo to baby to toddler. Like, we are absolutely designed like one way to move. And the moment we're born, you know, we get put in a car seat. We get put in this car seat, right? And then where do my legs go? Sit in a chair the right way, you know? And it's like we get mad at kids because how they sit in chairs. They sit in a chair like they sit in the ground. You know, they're constantly folding their feet up under them. They're on their knees. And you're like, quit doing that. Well, they're doing that because they would rather be on the ground. That's where we're supposed to be. Like, a really good concept is this idea that movement is if, like, I move forward, like me standing up, moving around, that's movement. The opposite of that is rest, me sitting on the ground. Like, how I rest is equally as important as how I move.
Endless web. And it might be another Google Meet, or it might be bowl prep. Of course, hopefully we're prepping at that time as well. But I'd love to come. I'd love to visit again, because it is. I think I got through like 40% of the questions I wanted to. And then it's a whole other rabbit hole that tied into square one. You mentioned isometrics and that, which is something I'd love to talk about. But for time's sake, and this volleyball recruit that I know we're going to get, we're going rapid fire. We end up rapid fire questions, and we already, the endless book was one of them that we usually ask.
There's another one, Philip Beach, Muscles and Meridian.
And Ashley is here, our wonderful intern as well. She looks yes. educated after sitting in that class. Ashley, you got one for us?
Well, the one I had was about a book, but I have another one in mind. If you were able to coach beside anyone dead or alive, who would it be?
I don't know. I think right now it would just be to like live with some of these guys that I've kind of discussed today that are thinking along this. I'm taking the courses because I need to know what they're. I need to listen to them talk. I need to listen to them explain. I need to learn from somebody else. And I think that's a really important thing for wherever you're at. Like we're all learning. We're all good. But like who's coaching you? You know, who are you learning from? So that's where my mind is at right now. That's where I'm thinking. So those are the people I would like to be around. I mean, I hired a guy here, Ryan O'Hade. I hired because I was like, I need you here because I need to know what you know.
Well, give us one more besides Endless Web. I know you're not just reading one book.
Muscles and Meridians, a guy named Philip Beach.
How many books you got going on at a time?
A lot.
It's like changing a TV channel. We're going from one show to another. You just go from one book to the next.
I tend to listen to one on the way in. I tend to read one on like on the computer. And then, I have one just, I always have a bunch of stuff going at the same time. If you want kind of like the end all be all of leadership book, The Fifth Discipline, I think I maybe discussed this at the clinic, but, that one, The Fifth Discipline and a book called The Path of Least Resistance by Robert Fritz are absolute game changers in how you'll see the world. Because once you start thinking in systems thinking and you see how everything is a part of the system and nothing happens, like the really quick explanation of it, like you guys are writing notes right now, like it's not the hand that writes, you write. You know, I can cut my hand off, throw it on the ground, ain't gonna write shit. Same thing. So when you see it like that, it changes how you view everything. It helps you ask better questions. Oh, my glute's not firing. We need to do this. The real question is, why is the glute not firing in the first place? And that leads you to some really uncomfortable things, because that leads you to a space where, like, I don't know. And then what are you going to do with that? Are you going to lean in and go find out and lean into that uncomfortable feeling? Because on the other side of that uncomfortable feeling is something that a lot of other people don't know. But because you're willing to get uncomfortable with it, or like I tell the guys, like, because you're willing to eat shit and admit that, like, I don't know, that'll take you somewhere that most people will just like instinctually ignore. But until you're aware of that, you kind of subconsciously ignore it, and you're not even aware of it, that that question exists, or that that limitation exists. So those two books, those last two books I mentioned, really lean heavy onto those kind of concepts. I think that they've changed my life completely on the way I think and see the world.
Which we didn't get into that either. I had system leadership. I wanted to dive into that for another time. Brock? Right?
I got one. What's your why?
My personal why is, like, I want to be great. Like, I want to be elite. I've always dreamed about it. I think that's the selfish why. But, and I say that because I would love to say my kids, and yes, they're absolutely a part of that. But if it were about my kids, then I wouldn't have moved them all over the country like I have. So the real motivating why is that, like, I want to do something special. It just happens to be that I also think that it's important for my son to know that if you want to do something special, it ain't easy, and you're going to have to sacrifice, and you're going to have to question whether or not it's worth it. And the emotional strain on that is going to be really difficult. And the same conversation I have with the players, you're not going to be elite without going through it. If Simone Biles, the greatest gymnast to ever do it, has to check out of a world competition to get her mentals right, you're going to need to be familiar with what it looks like to go into those dark places. And so those are my two whys. And I've always felt like been drawn. Like, I really, really enjoy being around the guys. I can have a bad day, and as soon as I get around the team and the guys, like, I don't know what it is. Like, I'm happy again, because I've always felt like I needed to be doing this. And so, I don't know. It's a strong calling. I don't know what they say: preachers preach and coaches coach. Like, that's all. I just want to coach. Good at it.
Well, Coach, you did not disappoint. That was wonderful, and we appreciate your time. And if you're willing, we can figure it out. But to be continued, as opposed to that, wraps it up.
All right, I appreciate it. Anytime. I love talking about it. The more I can talk about it, the better I can get at explaining it. So, I definitely get something out of this. So, I appreciate you guys. Don't hesitate. Anybody that's there at the meeting, don't hesitate to shoot me an email. Get back to you as soon as I can on those things.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it, and best of luck the rest of the season, Coach.
All right, same to you guys. We'll see y'all.